Hi everyone, and welcome to eLearning with E2R. Thanks for joining us. Our topic today is a topic that we routinely, regularly, frequently are asked to visit and revisit. And that topic today is constructive dismissal. And hopefully today, by the time we're finished our session, you will get an understanding, certainly a basic understanding of what constructive dismissal is all about, and more importantly, how to proactively deal with those circumstances. Before we get started, here are a few reminders. If you have any questions during the presentation, feel free to use the chat box at the bottom right-hand side of your screen to type them out. We will do our best to answer them during the presentation, but if we don't get a chance to answer in the moment, we will certainly reach out afterwards to schedule a call to speak with one of our advisors. In case you missed any of our past webinars, you can find the recordings over on e2rsolutions.com, and the PowerPoint presentation can be found on your member portal. Don't forget that member portal. Lastly, we take this opportunity to remind all of you that the information contained within our webinars is an overview only, not intended to be an analysis of all areas of employment and labor law, and accordingly, we ask that you not rely upon this presentation as legal advice for any given set of facts and circumstances. As always, contact us for any specific questions related to the information in this webinar or any other topic, and for specific applicability of this topic area to your workplace. Our next e-learning with E2R will take place on March the 29th, so mark your calendars now. Of course, we will remind you as we get closer to that date, and of course, the baseball season will almost be upon us. Now, without further ado, let's begin, and Alexandra today is joining me. Thankfully, she's joining me so she can provide all the most important content, and I can tag along. The agenda for our discussion today is as follows. Constructive dismissal defined. Of course, you're always going to get definitions when you have courts and tribunals involved in a legal principle. Key questions that you need to ask yourself to determine and evaluate whether a constructive dismissal scenario is now before you. Making the claim, how the claim is ultimately made, the types of changes that will constitute constructive dismissal, how you, and of course you'll want to pay close attention to this, how you reduce the risk of a constructive dismissal claim, the all-important duty to mitigate, which is very significant from a damages standpoint, so we will review that in some detail. Employment standards versus the common law, that ever-confusing combination of employment standards versus common law. We will try our best to clarify that. We will go through some cases because often there is no better way to appreciate what is actually going on out there and the principles involved than to look at a few cases. And then finally, some concluding remarks, as we always do. All right, let's get into it and let's talk about definitions. So what happens out there in the real world is an employer often wishes to respond to certain circumstances, be they economic, operational, or even limitations as to an employee's performance. So what does the employer do? The employer takes the position that it doesn't want to terminate the employment contract, but wishes to make changes to certain terms and conditions of that individual's employment agreement. But where those changes are fundamental, right, and are affected with respect to fundamental terms of the relationship, i.e. compensation. So if you change that fundamental term in a fundamental way, then really what you're saying is, or at least the way the courts look at it, is employer, you really don't think or believe anymore that you're bound by the employment agreement. So I, as the employee who's now the victim of this change, can take the position that I'm terminated. Hence the term constructive dismissal. In other words, by virtue of what you've done, employer, I'm taking the position, I'm terminated, I'm out of here, exit stage door left, and oh, by the way, when I exit stage door left, I'm not going without a bucket full of cash from you because you owe me severance as though it was a termination without cause. Okay, so the actual definition that you'll see from judges across our land is set out essentially in that second point. It's defined as a unilateral, so the employer takes an act on its own, and substantial change, so it has to be a substantial change, not a minor change. Of course, that is difficult in certain facts and circumstances to determine. Change made by an employer to a fundamental term of an employee's employment without consent. All right, we won't have time to go into great detail on that, but ultimately, of course, two parties can agree to anything they want. So an employer and an employee can say, yeah, sure, that's great, let's make that change, sounds great. And that's, of course, appropriate. So, but where you have it without consent or without reasonable notice, that gets a little complicated in Ontario, and we're going to talk more about that, or where the employer's treatment of the employee makes continued employment intolerable. In other words, like a hostile work environment, I'm out of here, it's a constructive dismissal, please pay me on the way out the door.
And by way of an extension of what Stu is talking about, the constructive dismissal can take two forms. It can be a single unilateral act by the employer that breaches an essential term of the employment contract. The best and probably the most common example of that would be a substantial change to an employee's remuneration. So if you're going to, for example, reduce my remuneration by 20%, that would certainly be a substantial change. Or two, a series of acts by the employer that, read together, show that the employer no longer intends to be bound by the employment contract. So that could be a series of smaller changes, like maybe you move me from an office to a cubicle, perhaps my job duties change, perhaps I no longer have people reporting to me, that together would give rise to a substantial and fundamental change. With that being said, an employer is certainly allowed some flexibility in regards to the organization and reorganization of its workplace. Furthermore, an employer does not always have to secure an employee consent before making changes. For example, realigning job duties and responsibilities while maintaining compensation and title is not generally considered constructive dismissal. Courts recognize that employers are not that they are static, rather, and that there's a certain fluidity required to respond to business requirements. So given that, you are certainly entitled to make changes to meet business requirements, and not every little change is going to trigger a constructive dismissal.
And that's a great point Alexander makes, but that's often the challenge at the same time, because an employer is typically, for legitimate and bona fide reasons, make certain operational changes which necessitate changes in job duties and maybe who you report to changes, right? And those are genuine responses to business conditions. And so where they're appropriate but not significant as it relates to the employee's terms and conditions, probably that's fine and a constructive dismissal won't be found to exist. But the problem is, as you move along that continuum from, let's call it a minor change to a significant change, you are getting closer and closer to the triggering of a constructive dismissal. So, you know, that's often the discussions we're having with clients is most clients are very legitimately seeking to make changes. We then are in a position or have to evaluate those changes and say, hey, listen, I mean, unless you're getting the consent, really, you've changed the reporting relationship. That person's career pathing now may have been impacted considerably. And because they're in this, I'll call it other department or other business unit, maybe now that you've asked them to work in that area, the bonus structure now may have changed. And now it's inferior to what the employee was formerly participating in. So that now, and as Alexandra mentions, in the aggregate, you start looking at all those things and, wow, you may be there, you may not be there, which is why this area is indeed gray. But the one sort of principle that you should know is ultimately the employee has to demonstrate that there has been a constructive dismissal. So the onus rests with the employee. And, of course, counsel typically or hopefully in most cases will identify to the employee if the situation arises. But look, there's no certainty attached to this situation. You could lose. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that later on.
Yeah, and the courts highlight again and again, and we'll get into this more later, and to the frustration of employers, each case is determined on its own facts and circumstances. So that's why it's so important that whenever you're making a change that could perhaps amount to a fundamental change that you call us, and we can help develop a strategy as it relates to how to mitigate that risk.
And, you know, we're going to talk about it, I think, later on, but one of the questions we often get asked is, hey, one of the options we're considering from an organizational perspective is reduce everybody's compensation by X percentage. And it's a good question because many employers are not aware that, as Alexandra has mentioned, remuneration is a fundamental term. But to trigger a constructive dismissal, you have to change it in a fundamental way. If I reduce everybody's pay across the board by $1, I clearly have impacted a fundamental term of the employment relationship, but I haven't impacted it in a fundamental way. So I have not triggered a constructive dismissal. Now, that employee may allege a breach of an employment agreement. Fine. That's a different issue. We don't have time to talk about that today. But from a constructive dismissal standpoint, to the extent it is not a fundamental change, and we'll use the example of remuneration, to remuneration, well, you may not have indeed triggered a constructive dismissal. So certainly in the ranges of 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe even 5%, you're probably not triggering a constructive dismissal. So bear that in mind always, because employers are often surprised to learn that you can make, which is not a minor change from an overall operational perspective and budgeting perspective, reduce compensation across the board. Okay. So let's move on to key questions. All right. So some of the questions you need to consider to determine whether we are approaching a circumstance where an employee can claim a constructive dismissal. So was the change imposed unilaterally? Right? In other words, did the employer say, here's what's happening. Effective this date, here's what's happening. Right? No negotiation, no discussion, no agreement from the employee. How substantial was the change being imposed? Precisely what we just talked about. If I reduce, as an employer, everyone's compensation by $1, maybe 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%, I'm going to stop as I get a little bit higher there. I don't want to mislead you. But those percentages are not substantial changes, typically, in the absence of other changes. All right? Because remember, as Alexandra mentioned before, if you change, you know, all of a sudden I'm in a cubicle and I report to somebody else and you're reducing my pay by 5% and my career pathing is gone, and right, in the aggregate, it may indeed be a constructive dismissal. So is the term of employment being affected minor or major? If I say you can use the bicycle rack for your bicycle when you drive your bike to work, and now I tell you, no, you can't use the bicycle rack anymore, that is likely a term of employment that would not qualify as being major. It would be minor, and therefore a compromising change to that term would not likely constitute a constructive dismissal. Did the employee acquiesce? That's a dangerous one, but a legitimate consideration. I say dangerous because there are unfortunately cases where courts have essentially said, yeah, we realize that the employee never said anything when you made the unilateral change, employer, but come on, it's not fair. Now, that's not a legal principle. That's the reality of arguing employment law cases before courts and tribunals. So, yes, the principle is you can't jump out of the bulrushes 2 years later and say, aha, you made that change in a fundamental way to my compensation. The employer's position would be, yes, 2 years later, you didn't say anything. So by your omission, you consented. So in essence, you acquiesced. But be careful on that argument. Does the employee have to mitigate his or her damages by continuing to work, or can the employee resign? That is a very interesting question that we're going to deal with in a little bit further on in this presentation today. But to say it sort of very briefly, anytime an employee brings a claim, an employee has an overall obligation to go out and try to secure alternate employment or do something to limit his or her damages. That's the basic principle. So if I change your duties and responsibilities in a certain way, and you don't like that, but all's well otherwise in the workplace, the relationships are fantastic, this change doesn't give rise to any kind of humiliation, right? Then I have the argument as the employer to say, hey, listen, I get it, you're not happy with it, you think you're constructively dismissed, but there's no reason why you can't stay on and look for another job with us and mitigate your damages. Really, there's no reason why you can't do that. That's the argument an employer makes, but in many cases, it's not accepted by the court. Okay. Very important point to bear in mind. You'll notice we have at the top of that slide, it says employment agreement, employment agreement, employment agreement. That is not a typo or not us repeating ourselves over and over. That is there for a purpose. And the purpose is we can never underscore enough. We are by guerrilla warfare with all our clients. Anytime we get the opportunity to ambush you with the importance of an employment agreement, we say it. And so here we're saying it again. It is of fundamental importance. And why in this context? Because even if I make those changes that we've discussed so far, I make a fundamental change to a fundamental term. Okay, well, what does it do? What does it mean? Well, it means I've terminated, right? Constructive dismissal means termination. All right, let's look at the termination provision in the contract. Well, if we have an enforceable termination provision, that's all the employee's entitled to. So, if you have, particularly one limiting entitlement to minimum standards, you don't have an incentive for an employee to walk away and say, I'm going to go for that big pot of gold for seven.
Okay, let's talk about making the claim. So in the event of a change that an employee doesn't agree with, then assuming this change constitutes a constructive dismissal, the employee basically has two options available to him or her. One, they can accept the constructive dismissal and continue on in employment. And if this is the case, we would often want to paper that change by drafting an amendment letter confirming their acceptance. B, the employee may assert that a constructive dismissal has occurred and that the employment relationship has been terminated by the employer. So in the case of B, and if the employee is successful, the employee is then entitled to reasonable notice of termination or compensation in lieu thereof. And again, this notice, what they're entitled to will depend on whether or not there is an employment contract that limits the employee to whatever is set up in the termination provision. And if there is no employment agreement, then the notice would be dependent on the usual factors, like the service, age, type of position, etc. If an employee who has the onus of proving that there was a constructive dismissal loses his or her case, he or she is then deemed to have resigned without any entitlement to notice or pay in lieu of that notice. Now keep in mind that courts permit and even encourage employees to take a reasonable period of time in order to evaluate the nature of the change, to kind of decide whether or not they're going to take the constructive dismissal route. So there's no obligation on that employee to immediately get up and leave as a result of the change.
Yeah, that's a good point. And one of the interesting strategies, and we'll likely touch on it later as well, one of the interesting strategies from an employer perspective is if you need to make the change, and we are in the sphere of possible triggering of a constructive dismissal, then one of the strategies from an employer perspective is to say, hey, listen, this is temporary, and we're going to reevaluate. When you say it's temporary, and the employee pulls the ripcord and says, aha, constructive dismissal, you as an employer are in the position to say, whoa, we told you it was temporary. We didn't say this was permanent. And so you give yourself an opportunity to argue from the employer's perspective that the employee was premature in taking the position that he or she was constructively dismissed. So it's something to always bear in mind if you're getting close to that, let's call it, the precipice of constructive dismissal to take the position or identify that it's temporary. Okay, let's look at the types of changes, and we've sort of touched on them in discussing constructive dismissal so far. Demotion, right? We're going to talk about that. Of course, you change somebody's position in such a way that you compromise their position. They can take the position that that's constructive dismissal. Forced promotion, that's an interesting one. You don't see it all too often, of course, but in theory it's there, and from time to time it can happen. Reduction in total remuneration, we've been touching on that right now in our discussion so far. Change in work hours, that's often an interesting one because you are looking at whatever the current policy, the drafting of that policy as it relates to hours of work, and determining if there is any flexibility built into that, how is it communicated to the employee on hire. Layoff, a very interesting one because in most employment agreements, to the extent they exist, there is no specific reference to layoff, and that can limit the employer's ability to rely on a layoff. Suspension or discipline. We're going to talk about, indeed, one of the significant cases that went to the Supreme Court of Canada talking about, well, where's the ability to impose a suspension? Undermining an employee's authority. Of course, if an employee had authority to do certain things, and those are compromised by virtue of an employer's unilateral decision, maybe a constructive dismissal. Location change, something we're all probably in our travels somewhat familiar with, where the employer is requiring that an employee move from his or her current location, and that creates personal circumstances that are unfavorable for the employee. And then poison work environment, right? The situation where the employee claims it's intolerable, I can't stay, please pay me on the way out the door.
Okay, now we're getting to the good stuff, reducing the risk, and this is often what we chat to all of you about. So first and foremost, you want to be clear. You want to be clear about the change being imposed, and written notification is absolutely preferred. If you are unclear, there is uncertainty, and if there is uncertainty, this will work against you when you resist an allegation of constructive dismissal. Hopefully you're having discussions with your employees. Hopefully, you may want to identify the business reason behind the change. Perhaps this is where you're going to clarify that the change is temporary, as Stu mentioned earlier. Being very clear with the employee is paramount. Also, the second point speaks to document, document, document. As with many things in employment and HR, if the proposed change is subject to discussion or negotiation, we want to be papering that and clearly setting that out in writing. Now, keep in mind that unilateral and substantial changes can, in fact, be made to fundamental terms of employment so long as sufficient advance notice in writing is provided. Now, in Ontario, because of this decision called RONCO, it gets a little bit murkier, and I don't want to get into the legalese, but basically in Ontario, because of RONCO, to change the terms of an employment contract when an employee refuses to accept a variation, an employer must clearly provide adequate notice of termination, not simply notice of the change, while also notifying the employee that they are being offered new employment at the end of the notice period on the varied terms.
So that, for those of you, so put it this way, those of you outside Ontario, and let's sort of not include Quebec for the moment, those of you outside Ontario, you're in a favorable position because at least as of this moment, and it's always a little bit, to some degree, the sands shift from time to time, and that's why you have to remain current. But essentially, in the rest of Canada, excluding Quebec, in the rest of Canada, you can tell somebody, hey, a year from now, you're going to have your job reduced by, effectively, your duties by 50%, and your compensation is going down by 50%. And if that person was entitled, if he or she was to be terminated to 12 months, assuming no contract again, then you've satisfied your legal obligation by providing that advance notice, no matter how much the employee says, I hate it, I don't want it. Doesn't matter. 12 months from now, that change is going to be effective. That satisfies the common law obligation, once again, assuming no contractual provision. That assumes the the common law obligation to provide notice of termination. So that's it. And during the currency of those 12 months, the employee can look for alternate employment. Great. In Ontario, as Alexandra mentioned, you can't do that. You essentially also, for purposes of, as Alexandra says, not to get too much into the legalese because it can get a little complicated, essentially in Ontario, you're given the option. You're saying, here's your change or here's your severance. Right? Choose which one you want. Right? So that's what, and having said that, in Ontario, you have courts constantly trying. Ronco has never really, really gained significant traction, but we also can't say it's not still applicable. So it's a very bizarre aberration in the case law in Ontario.
Okay. Other ways to mitigate the risk would be to have policies or employment contracts that provide for changes to location, for example, job duties, layoffs. You'll notice in the contracts that we provide you, they have language in this way. Basically, what this point is saying is that an employee is going to be hard-pressed to argue that a change is fundamental or substantial when it's been expressly contemplated in a policy or an employment contract. So definitely that's an important consideration. Another one would be to have written progressive discipline policies that provide for demotion. If you have it set out in your progressive discipline policy that a consequence of misconduct is a demotion, then you're simply complying with the policy. So that could be a defense to resist constructive dismissal. Also, keep in mind that courts may be influenced by employers in an employer's favor if changes are made as a result of the company being in financial trouble and if there are numerous warnings that the changes are pending. In this instance, as long as an employer is acting in good faith in the implementation of changes, then a court will typically be more sympathetic to that employer. Disappearance of jobs or positions as a result of reorganization or a merger of two entities may not result in constructive dismissal if the employer makes genuine efforts to reintegrate the employee into the newly reorganized structure at an equivalent level of status and compensation. Again, courts will practically consider the backdrop of the changes and where, once again, the changes are made in good faith, there will be a little bit of elbow room for the employer. So.
Yeah, that's a good point, because what you often have is, let's say, I'm the VP sales and marketing, but there is a merger, and now the combined entities are significant. Well, there's no way I could be the VP sales and marketing for both organizations. It's just too big. So my duties are changed to VP sales or VP marketing, right? Not the combination, because literally the workload is too significant. In all likelihood, assuming compensation levels are appropriate, et cetera, that's not going to constitute a constructive dismissal. Having said that, you'll certainly have executives put up their hands and say, we don't think that's proper, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, in most cases, that won't constitute a constructive dismissal. Okay, the duty to mitigate. All right, so if there's a term in the contract for some reason that says that you don't have to mitigate, you'll see that in executive employment agreements all the time, at least at that level, that they don't have to mitigate. So if you constructively dismiss an executive, the executive's position is going to be, well, you've triggered my severance obligation under the contract, and there's a clear provision that says I don't have a duty to mitigate. So pay me my money, I'm out the door. Okay? But it sort of outside typically that circumstance, you've got a very interesting circumstance that arises with respect to this legal principle about the duty to mitigate. So let's step back for a second. You terminate an employee, all right, let's assume just for the moment there's no employment agreement with an enforceable termination provision. The employee's got 5 years of service, so the employee's saying, I'm entitled to 7 months. Compensation in lieu of reasonable notice. All right, that's fine, and maybe a court would even award that 7 months. But what else is a court going to do? A court's also going to want to determine, based on the evidence, whether the employee has made, we'll call it, sufficient efforts to mitigate, go and find alternate employment or self-employment. And to the extent that employee has done that, those earnings are set off against that 7-month entitlement. Okay, So here in the same way, I as the employer have made changes to the employee's fundamental terms of the employment relationship in one way or another. The employee says, aha, I've been constructively dismissed, and starts whistling. I'm so happy, I've been constructively dismissed, give me my severance. Well, the employer's position as relates to that may very well be, hold it a second. Everything's lovely here. You may not agree with some of the things we had to do, but at the end of the day, you certainly can stay with us. Everybody loves you here. The relationship is great. The economic circumstances have caused us to have to do this, but your prestige has not been impacted in any way whatsoever. You should stay here, work, continue to work until you find a job. In other words, mitigate. That's the employer's argument. But of course, employees will take the position that's too uncomfortable. I can't do that. I've been humiliated. The relationships are no good anymore because of my taking this position. I can't stay. Right? So in order to be proactive, certainly, right, you want to be sure, you want to very, very clearly set out the details of all the changes that you're making so the employee understands them, so the employee can't say, well, I didn't know, so my duty to mitigate isn't really triggered because I didn't understand the profile of this new position. I clearly have to make it. It's got to be a bona fide effort, not disguised, with a view to getting the employee to quit, right? I mean, if that intention is determined, that duty to mitigate won't exist, won't apply to the employee. And once again, and as you'll notice in this last point, you've got to make sure the circumstances are not humiliating or embarrassing and the relationship can't be acrimonious. So what does that mean for you? Any time you're going to make changes that may constitute a constructive dismissal, you make sure all your communications are absolutely lovely and dignified and friendly, and because what you want to be in a position to argue is that the relationship was outstanding, so the employee therefore necessarily had a duty to mitigate. Right? So I don't care how angry you are, take the emotion out of it. In any communication with the employee, if you're making changes that may trigger a constructive dismissal, put smiley faces on, the correct emoji, whatever you need to do. Okay. Where there are allegations of, you know, harassment or bullying, right, well, then the employee's going to be in a very good position to say that, look, my duty to mitigate doesn't exist in this circumstance. I'm not going back into that environment under any circumstances. And if that's credible, sure, the employee's not going to have that duty to mitigate. You want to ask the employee to return to work in writing right after the constructive dismissal is alleged. Right? Don't wait till you get the lawyer's letter. Well, you may get the lawyer's letter, but then identify it right away. Say, hey, listen, come on back. Right? And by coming back, and in fact, depending on the circumstances, you may be able to put that employee back in their former position for a period of time, right? That's if the relationship is great, well then the employee has no argument. Because what you're saying to the employee is, look, okay, fine, I get it. All right, come on back. In effect, let's call it, work out the notice period at your prior terms and conditions of employment, and then we'll end our relationship. And if the employee says no to that, whoa, that's a problem, right? But ultimately, this is a challenging area for an employer to rely on.
Okay, so employment standards versus common law. So constructive dismissal can also trigger notice and severance obligations under the employment standards legislation. The test under employment standards legislation is generally the same as common law, a unilateral and significant change of a fundamental term of the employment relationship. In addition, keep in mind that an employee is not required to mitigate damages by remaining with the employer for a period of time in order to be entitled to the statutory notice or severance pay where applicable.
Okay, let's discuss some cases. So you get a sense of how the constructive dismissal fact scenario is applied by the courts. So here you have an executive director, believe. In fact, he was a lawyer because it was New Brunswick legal aid. He was a lawyer. He's administratively suspended by the board with pay, okay, for an indefinite period of time because some allegations are made and they say, look, well, let's put you on ice for a while, but don't worry, we're going to pay you, right? And then they sort of decide they're going to work towards a mutually acceptable method of bringing the contract to an end, right? But he's on an administrative, what they called an administrative suspension with pay. Ultimately, they don't end up in a with mutually acceptable terms, and the employee says, hey, my suspension that you put me on is effectively taking the position that my contract doesn't exist, and said you've constructively dismissed me by putting me on ice indefinitely. Right. At the trial court level and at the appeal court level, they said, yeah, employer, I get it. The guy, you didn't constructively dismiss him. He was still employed by you. In fact, you were still paying him. You just put him on a suspension while these issues were being resolved. But that found its way all the way up to the Supreme Court of Canada. The Supreme Court of Canada took a different view. And they said, look, we don't even think the suspension was reasonable or justified, and accordingly, it constituted a constructive dismissal, and therefore, he was entitled to severance. And the Supreme Court of Canada, in looking at the factors that were relevant, they looked at the duration of the suspension, whether the suspension was with pay, whether the employer demonstrated good faith, including legitimate business reasons for the suspension. But here's the big piece of this. The court determined that the employer neither had express authority to suspend the employee. In other words, no mention in the employment contract of the right to impose administrative suspensions. Where was it? Where's the term in the employment relationship? This is the Supreme Court of Canada's talking. Where is it in the employment agreement that it provides for the ability to put somebody on ice indefinitely? Nowhere. Nowhere. Now, in his case, there wasn't a good reason for the suspension as well, so the facts didn't generate a whole lot of sympathy for the employer. So the position the Supreme Court of Canada took was, well, it's not anywhere, and it wasn't reasonable in the circumstances. So it's a constructive dismissal. And the Supreme Court, in its decision, stated, as you see there on the slide, the trial judge failed to recognize that constructive dismissal may be established not only on the basis of a sufficiently serious breach, but also by conduct which, in light of all the surrounding circumstances and viewed objectively by a reasonable person in the position of the employee, shows that the employer does not intend to be bound in the future by important terms of the contract of employment. So a lot of legalese to say, look, by virtue of the employer doing things that really weren't provided for in the employment agreement, and quite frankly, just being unreasonable from our perspective, this is the court speaking, we say a constructive dismissal has occurred.
Okay, so the next case has to do with a non-payment of a bonus. So this employee, he was actually the CEO, and he made in excess of $1 million per year. The terms of his employment was set out in an informal memorandum of understanding, which provided for an annual bonus of 10% of pre-tax profits, subject to certain exemptions. So in 2011, as a result of a one-time transaction, the capital gains weren't included in the employee bonus calculation, which essentially meant that he missed out on a pretty sizable bonus that exceeded $300,000. So as a result of the employer not paying that bonus, the employee alleged that it was a fundamental breach to the terms of his employment and brought an action seeking wrongful dismissal damages and payment of the bonus. So what did the court say? The court agreed with the employee that the profits earned ought to have been included in the calculation of his bonus. Accordingly, the failure to pay the bonus was a breach of the terms of employment, and the court did order the employer to pay the employee the bonus. However, the court did not agree that this failure to pay the amount constituted constructive dismissal. There had been no actual alteration to the terms of employment, that would reduce compensation on a permanent basis. This was just a one-time non-payment of the amount. The evidence established that all parties understood that this employment and compensation would otherwise continue unchanged. The court actually rejected his argument, the employee's argument, that he couldn't sue his employer for the bonus while remaining employed at the company. The court also noted that the employee had other alternatives available to him to kind of reconcile this, including mediation or arbitration. At the end of the day, the takeaway for this case is that absent other compounding conduct by the employer, a one-time non-payment of bonus is unlikely to constitute constructive dismissal. Again, depends on the circumstances, but in this case, it was not constructive dismissal.
And we're pretty close to this case on this end because we argued it on behalf of the employer, and as you can see successfully, the postscript to that is it has been appealed to the Court of Appeal, and we're awaiting a decision on that. I mean, this is a close call, and there is no question about it. As Alexandra mentions, you've got a one-time payment only. This would not affect anything on a go-forward basis. And so, quite frankly, our position before the court was clear that we weren't, in effect, announcing to the employee or saying we're no longer bound by the employment agreement. In fact, the opposite was true. Our client was committing to the employment agreement unquestionably on a go-forward basis. We just have a disagreement with respect to a payment that would only have application for this 1 year. So how could we be seen, our client be seen, to be, the legal word is, repudiating the contract? We no longer wish to be bound by the contract. That's clearly not the case. And if that's the definition of constructive dismissal, how possibly could our client be characterized as so doing? So the trial court certainly agreed with that position. We'll wait to see what the Court of Appeal has to say about it, but it's a very interesting sort of unique scenario. Farwell and Sitter, that's, as you see there, a long-standing employee, 38 years, who's demoted from VP Operations to Purchasing Manager following a restructuring. Right? So what does the employee say? Well, hold a second. You know, I'm purchasing manager now? You got to be kidding me, right? Says, I've been constructively dismissed. Please pay me my severance based on 38 years of service. And it wasn't too tough for the Court of Appeal to find its way up to the Court of Appeal, if you'll notice. It upheld the lower court's ruling that the employee indeed had been constructively dismissed when he was demoted. And the Court of Appeal also considered whether he should have been required to return to work, because what's the employer saying? Hey, listen, okay, I know you're not happy, blah, blah, blah. But you've been around 38 years, you're purchasing manager, it's a result of a reorg. I mean, you know, you got a job, like, continue to come back and work. So you could have mitigated, right? But the court noted that he had not been asked to return to work and work out the notice period after he had been constructively dismissed, right? If they had asked him to come back to the same position for the balance of the notice period, he would have been required to do so. So let's be clear about that once again. So what's the court saying? All right, the employer notifies the employee of changes his demotion, in effect. The employee says I'm constructively dismissed. So what could the employer have done? The employer could have done, all right, sorry, why don't you come back, we'll put you back. We'll put you back up to VP operations. And why don't you work out your notice period, which presumably in his case, 38 years is going to be big. But nevertheless, had they done that, and here's why this is relevant. I know your employer is sitting out there going, yeah, I don't want to bring the guy back. He sent the lawyer's letter. He said hateful things about us. I don't want to bring him back. But I don't want to bring him back. Well, it's usually more uncomfortable for the employee to come back than it is for the employer to bring him back. And because of that, the vast majority of employees will say, no, I'm not coming back. And as soon as they say that, you're in a very good position to argue the employees failed to mitigate. Provided you haven't said anything, excuse the technical expression, stupid to the employee. If the relationship is good and there's no reason why, you don't give the employer a reason to allege it's acrimonious or what have you, well then, the employee can come back. Okay? Now, in this case, of course, they didn't make any offers to return to work. Right? So he had no obligation to mitigate.
Okay, on to the next case. So this case involved a long-term employee who was offered a new position as part of the company's reorganization. Now keep in mind, during his tenure of employment, he had several job changes. Some of them were promotions, some of them were lateral moves. In this instance, the employer had moved him from an implementation team lead position to a business analyst position. Now the new position of business analyst had the same salary, benefits, and rewards, but his office was to be replaced with a cubicle, and he lost his 5 reporting subordinates, who are now at the same level as the employee in the employer's hierarchy. So the employee claimed to be demoted and constructively dismissed. Now, what the court found is that the change to his duties was not dramatic, and that he had been hasty in resigning from his position. He should have remained in the role, at least temporarily, to see if his concerns would kind of play out. The court was of the view that its concerns about the loss of status were more subjective than objective. And this kind of speaks to my point earlier about courts actually seem to encourage an employee to stick around post-change to evaluate the impact of the change on the employee. Now, an employer requires some latitude to structure the affairs of its operation, but Stuart's going to talk about the next case as evidence that each case will be determined based on its unique circumstances.
So for a little change of pace for our office, we represented Mr. Jodoin against Nissan Canada. And I'm going to say this tongue-in-cheek, not surprisingly, we were successful. So he had 10 years of service, right? He's transferred to a new position, get this, no job description. So I've been there 10 years. Remember, Mr. Jodoin, I'm there 10 years. I get a new job, no job description. I got no reports. I got no managerial responsibilities, which I had previously. I'm moving from a private office to a cubicle away from the management team, among the number of other changes as well. Now, since we are approximately 50 minutes into this presentation, I'm sure most of you now are saying, duh, Nissan Canada, you couldn't figure out that was a constructive dismissal? Apparently, they didn't. He does remain in the role for a month and a half, right? He's going to evaluate it, see what's going on, and then he says, look, enough's enough. I'm not doing this anymore, right? So the only facet of his employment with Nissan that didn't change was his remuneration, right? But the court found that since he'd been demoted, he was not required to remain in the role, right, because they argued, Nissan, that he could have stayed there and mitigated, and he said, whoa, no way. Because the guy's been demoted, to be humiliated. The guy's no reports, no manager responsibilities, moving from a private office to a cubicle, away from the management team, no job description, I mean, after 10 years. Not surprising, the court said, no, you don't have to work out your notice period with respect to your duty to mitigate. So, in this situation, clearly no obligation on Mr. Jodoin to hang around.
Okay, this is the last case that we'll be reviewing today. This involved a long-term employee. He was the general manager, and he was diagnosed with diabetes, and he actually lost sight in one of his eyes. Now, the employer took this employee aside and basically put the employee on a mandatory imposed leave of absence to address his health problems. The employer paid him 2 weeks, provided him with the disability forms, and then they hired a new general manager within a month. So you can see where this is going. The employee wasn't interested in disability benefits. He looked for and actually obtained alternative employment, which unfortunately only lasted for 8 months. So after that job fell through, he sued the first employer for constructive dismissal. At trial, the judge dismissed the claim, finding that the employee had resigned by looking for alternative employment. But Mr. Irvine, he correctly appealed, and on appeal, the court held that forcing the employee to take a medical leave without a sufficient medical information or a plan to reintegrate that employee constituted constructive dismissal. So obviously, in this instance, a forced medical leave when the employee did not want to take one was a fundamental change, and I'm confident that hiring a new general manager not more than a month after were not optics in the favor of the employer. The employee was awarded more than $340,000 in damages, so quite a slap on the wrist on the employer in this instance.
So, in the interest of time, we're always trying to make sure we limit, you know, our messages so that it can be understandable and hopefully not confusing. At the end of the day, right, constructive dismissal can be a difficult analysis factually, right? Because it's a little bit, it's a struggle. Right? Because as you heard Alexandra say, there is a sympathy from the court's perspective as it relates to bona fide organizational changes responding to business requirements. Having said that, you can't unilaterally change in a fundamental way, fundamental terms, without notice, right? And when I say without notice, remember, outside Ontario, just so we're clear on that, if an employee is entitled, and I use the example of 12 months in the absence of a contract, all right, I'm just using that as an example. So just pretend somebody's got lengthy service, managerial, they've been entitled to 12 months. They're 52 years old, they're entitled to 12 months. But I can tell that person 12 months from now, here are all the changes that constitute a constructive dismissal. And that's fine. There's no liability. In Ontario, let's just say you can't do that. Typically, you have to couple that with an offer of severance pay. Right? But the difficulty is on the facts, what will ultimately constitute a constructive dismissal? And that's going to be fact-specific. That's just the reality of it. Right? And with respect to the duty to mitigate, you're going to want to make sure relations are good. If there is an allegation of constructive dismissal, you may wish to just bring the person back, but you better do it right away after the allegation is made. Bring them back into their former position and let them work out their notice then. Often that employee will be too uncomfortable to come back, and you've now placed yourself in a very favorable position to argue the employee has failed to mitigate pursuant to their obligation. Okay? So, given we regularly deal with clients that need to respond to current business requirements, including reduction in compensation, make sure you talk to us about it, because there are, you know, we mentioned today about the percentage, maybe, you know, anywhere up to 5% in and of itself may not constitute a constructive dismissal. We talked about using the word temporary, right, that identifies, well, hey, we're not repudiating the contract on a go-forward basis. You can't take that position because we've just said it's temporary and we're going to reassess. So there are strategies where you can, from an employer perspective, make it much more difficult for an employee and his or her counsel to definitively state that, oh yeah, it's a constructive dismissal, you're entitled to significant damages. So we can't urge you enough to speak to us. But over and above that, once again, you know, we tried to stress it earlier and underscore the employment contract, but we can't underscore it enough. Because if you, for example, have a termination provision that limits entitlement to minimum standards, well, that's what your exposure is. And probably the discussion's not a big deal at the end of the day then. Right? In Ontario, of course, there's severance pay, and if you're regulated federally, it's severance pay. But in the rest of Canada, essentially looking at, call it a long service employee getting 8 weeks pay, right? And so even if it's a constructive dismissal, well, all right, fine. that employee doesn't seem to want to hang around anyway, so fine. I mean, we may decide to argue it isn't a constructive dismissal, but at the end of the day, we may decide, yeah, who cares? Fine. Here, take your 8 weeks. Goodbye. Right? It's not in our interest because this employee is no longer an engaged employee. So the employment contract essentially renders much of what we just said today, I'm not going to say irrelevant, but not particularly relevant, because the downside risk is so limited. So just one more reason why an employment agreement is so fundamental. Okay, so I think what we have achieved, what we wanted to achieve, and we've done it within the time frame. We always pat ourselves on the back. Alexandra and I are looking at ourselves as though, wow, we got a constructive dismissal in 1 hour. Nicely done. So with that, thank you all for attending. We look forward to seeing you on March the 29th. You'll get more information as that date approaches. And I want to thank Alexandra for doing all the heavy lifting on this. And once again, we look forward to seeing you on the 29th and talking to you between now and then. Thank you.